Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, from the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Friday, June 21st, 2024. You heard a little bit of family business there, right? Hey, it happens. We're broadcasting from our studio in Clarkstown, New York, aka New City. I always got, hey, Jim, you should be talking New City, not Clarkstown. Well, you know, okay. If I say New City, everybody says, oh, it's New York City. No, it's a New City. Some history behind this. We've all heard of Paramount, right? The studio.
The Paramount Studio
was owned, and I believe the Zucker family is still involved with Paramount Studio. They are... we got to turn on the lights. So Paramount Studio was owned by the Zucker family for many, many years. And my, just consequently, my great aunt, Anna, worked for the family. She was one of the maids or something along those lines, worked for the family here in New York and up here in New City back in the 1930s. But Adolf Zucker, they were a Austro-Hungarian family, and they only hired, like, for house help, they only hired Europeans, specifically from Germany or Austria. So that's how my aunt got in with them. And she was a very refined person. And this is where she learned. It was from the Zucker family. But anyway, I digress. The Zucker family owned, like, the whole town here. Most of the town. And they eventually sold it off and it got developed. And their original property is now the Paramount Country Club here, as I understand it. So, you know, New City has a little bit of history, and reportedly some of the old Tarzan movies from 1930s were filmed right here behind my house, right, about 800 foot in that direction. So, again, you know, and they're always trying to revitalize the area because it had a history of film. So, a lot of TV shows are here, filmed here, pilot episodes. Forget the name of the one that was filmed about a mile in that direction about 3 or 4 months ago. So finally getting unburied from all the stuff I had to put on hold for all this time dealing with family issues. So things are going good. We have some things on the horizon here in the very near future you'll be hearing about. I assure you of that. Now, just been going nuts here. So it's the summer solstice. We are basically almost 6 months away from Christmas. And have you started your Christmas shopping yet? I have. At least choosing things on Amazon and putting it into my wish list. And, you know, just you can never plan too early for these things. As my wife says, with her events, she is a professional event meeting planner. She spends about a year planning out every event, pretty much, for the bigger ones. She'll handle a small luncheon to like a 5 or 10,000 person event, no problem. And, you know, along those lines. So what happens often is we get a lot of questions on, we get a lot of questions from people on events, on how to run events and everything else. So, and then, and, you know, we had one tonight on weather insurance. So the listener that asked me about weather insurance, yes, it is a real thing, and a lot of events have them, especially if it's going to be one day event. So, and you have to, obviously, like with any insurance policy, you have to go and it's a lot involved in it, the big, long questionnaire. So we have been dealing with this heat dome out here in New York, and something I want to point out to you folks, there's been a lot of talk about AI, right? Artificial intelligence for the last few weeks. I think now we're on our fourth week where we now have AI. Now it's 4.0, right? So 4.0, not 4.0, not 4.0. Now, I've been very impressed with a lot of the information we're getting off of it and everything, but it's not without controversy. Now, people use this for all different types of things. And one observation that a family member made was, does that this mean that all of our creativity is going out the window and it really doesn't matter anymore? And, I mean, there is some of that. If you're using it, if you're using it for information to look things up and to organize, or maybe to look for some pretty obscure information, which I've used it for, and it works sometimes better than a search engine. Now, choose your search engine out there. There are plenty of them. Used to be even more popular ones, at least. And if you're going to be using it to organize your thoughts and maybe look up obscure information that you then have to go and double check, great tool. But there's a lot of danger with that, with the whole artificial intelligence thing. I mean, there's been reports of them putting AI into drones, military drones, like, and then people are fearing about a military type thing, like Terminator. Star Trek has been, yes, I'm a Star Trek fan, has been addressing AI since the 1960s. So this stuff has been out there, and also Isaac Asimov, right, wrote iRobot, and had set up the three laws of, I think it was three laws of robots. Robotics is probably worth a look here. I'm going to go to commercial break because I'm right in the middle of this. I want to explore this here. So I'm going to go to commercial break real quick, and we'll be right back and finish our thought here.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over three decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
Have you listened or watched the Safety Wars show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Polzel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So Isaac Asimov presented in a work of fiction called iRobot. We had to study this when I took a film class in college way back in the day. This was my last undergraduate course I had to take. The course was science fiction and social issues. And one of the attributes of a of good science fiction is that addresses current problems, right? In a context of science fiction. Another thing is that it has an aspect of what if. Now, what if? What if this happens? And there have been a couple of TV series over the years that were science fiction series that explored this what if. One of them comes to mind is Scott Bakula, right? Another Star Trek alumnus, and Quantum Leap. Another one is a TV series with Jerry O'Donnell and a whole bunch of other stars on there called Sliders in the mid-1990s. And we even go back and look at the tonight on Pluto TV, they had the Star Trek Voyager episode, Author. So all of these things, so science fiction as a vehicle of discussing social issues, what ifs. One of the main ones that, in the last 7 years or so that's come about is The Handmaid's Tales on Hulu, starring Elizabeth Moss. Another one, and we talk a little bit about demographic collapse on this program. We talk about demographics and everything else. Right now, over the last month, I'm getting all this information on demographic collapse that I never solicited. I don't know if it's being sent to me, through the algorithms or what have you, or just by coincidence, specifically on depopulation and things of that nature, where The Handmaid's Tale is one of these things where what happens when there's a demographic collapse, right? Regardless of it. And then it goes into a certain scenario, which I don't want to say is likely or not likely, but one of the possible scenarios that might be there. So Isaac Asimov was talking about this in 1942, and the short story Runaround, and it was included in 1950 iRobot novel. So the first law of robotics was a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Second law, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And the third law, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. Well, let's look at some of this drone technology we're seeing here and what's rumored to be out there in the military. Again, using robots to go and attack things. Being autonomous. So if you give, it's sort of like when you give, and I'm sorry for the metaphor here, when you give someone enough rope to hang themselves, sort of like that. So now you are going out there and you are giving robots, allowing them to make decisions, and AI to make decisions is not always a good thing. As we're seeing with a lot of the AI out there, and they're all about the same. I believe they're all pretty much the same here. I'm not favoring one or over another with these models. The information you're getting is wrong. The interpretation is wrong. I've used AI since it was commercially available, and you got to double check. You got to triple check. Now we're putting that type of AI into a computer, a weapon of war, that may, who knows what it's going to come out with. And there's been reports by former employees of very large data companies that you've heard of that have put out there that, hey, this stuff is not working well. This stuff is giving wrong answers, that this stuff is anti-human. So that's something you need to consider here with all of this. There are good things and there are bad things. I found out some information I would have never been able to get anywhere else using AI, but I had to verify it with everything. It's just that one of those things. One of the shortcomings is if you use any type of the text-to-graphics programs, You got to watch out on every one of those because I've gotten some very unusual results. We'll leave it at that. One of the things is they cannot spell proposal. They cannot spell technical. They cannot spell safety wars. They cannot spell gym. They cannot spell a lot of things. So you ask it to do something and with a logo or something, and God knows what you're going to get. That's why we're still going to need human beings for the time being here with what we do. Now, we're going to take another break here, and we're going to get into the news. And let's go. It's Friday, so we need our hop message from Friday. This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
How you respond to failure matters. How you respond to failure matters.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that. People say, now, what does that really mean? How you respond to failure. So let's say you're supervising someone. You're supervising someone. You know, you want to have all the information available, presumably, if you're supervising someone to make good decisions, to be able to manage people. Let's say something goes wrong and you start screaming and yelling at people. Do you really think that they're going to report, you think they're going to report a problem again, and now you're going to have less information. There may be a bigger screw-up later on. The other thing is this. If you, I think we all have to deal with this with children, especially tweens. Something bad happens, and how do we react? Well, first of all, they're going to react the way that you react, and it's followed by example. But on the other hand, hormones are kicking in and everything else, and something happens, they're not going to react logically or smart. They're not going to be able to see the other person's point of view. And what happens is you miss opportunities. Things don't go well. So how you react to it, if you're going to be a nervous Nelly or a Debbie Downer or yelling and screaming, guess what? No one's going to give you information. I portrayed this even before I ever heard of HOP around 7 or 8 years ago. I had Dave, my friend Dave. We were in a safety meeting together. I was officiating the meeting, and he was my assistant. And I said, Dave, we're going to do like a role-playing type of thing here. And he said, whoa, Jim, what are you talking about? No. With safety-related role-playing, you just need to go along with what I'm going to say. And I said, Dave, I want you to tell me to put on my safety glasses. So he says, Jimmy, you don't have your safety glasses on. You really ought to put them on. You're going to have an eye injury, maybe, you know? So I went in to him and yelled and screamed at him and laid it into him and everything else. And he was like, And I said to him, now, I was like, what do you think Dave's reaction is going to be the next time I don't have my safety glasses on or any other safety issue thing? I'm not following procedure. You name it. You think Dave is going to now tell me? And he said, no, I don't. Everyone looked at me, no. I said, well, why is it that we're doing this here with everybody here? Do you think that this is going to be a good idea where they're looking to get rid of this company at this facility, looking to rebid the contract, and here we are working against each other? And I said, this is the kind of behavior that led to a sister company to have a double fatality where people were told to put on fall protection, and the answer that they gave to the person that told them to put on fall protection was, and this came out years later after the thing was settled in court, it was, we taught you how to paint. We didn't teach you to paint. Go back to mixing the paint. We'll handle the painting. And we had a scaffold collapse. Now, this person was the replacement foreman on the weekend. There, the regular foreman had been off-site, had been on vacation. He had the authority to stop work. But because he was so intimidated, didn't make the decision. Ended up two people dead, the other one permanently disabled over this situation because he was intimidated. So with that, your reaction matters. You're not going to get information if you're going to, and in this case, the information that the people did not get was that the scaffolding was unsafe and that they were not following proper procedures. That was the message that was sent. So now your reaction matters, right? With that, how you react to bad information, to bad news, to criticism, all right? Often people criticize you because they're trying to help you. Maybe they're not doing about it the nicest way, but they're doing the best they can. They have good intentions. A little bit of logotherapy here, right? Man's search for meaning, Viktor Frankl. Everybody has good intentions, just that things, the results are bad sometimes. That's a very, I know. We have organizational psychologists that listen to the program and all, but that's basically it. So I'm all over the place, but, you know, this is, what else is new, right, with us? So we're going to go into the OSHA news and views, and let's see here. Let's go to share a screen. Yes, I'm not using the new software. I had to get back in the swing of things with that. We have news releases from Department of Labor. What do we got here? Okay, here we go. All right, U.S. Department of Labor finds a Woodbury resin maker's safety failures contributed to 37-year-old technician's fatal injuries. OSHA finds that a certain company failed to train workers in lockout and tagout procedures. A U.S. Department of Labor workplace safety investigation has found a Woodbury plastic and resin manufacturer could have prevented this out of Atlanta. A 37-year-old employee suffering fatal injuries by following required safety rules designed to keep machines from starting up during maintenance. They were cited for a whole bunch of stuff here, $98,000. Now, you can say, well, that seems like not a lot of money. Well, probably no repeat violations here. I don't review these prior. I just go here, go with it as it comes up. Citation one, item one. 1910-134, the employer did not identify and evaluate the respiratory hazards in the workplace, including a reasonable estimate of employee exposures to respiratory hazards and identification of the contaminant's chemical state and physical form. On or about blah, 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 the employer exposed employees to respiratory hazards and that the employer did not evaluate the workplace to determine the employee exposure levels to contaminants such as, but not limited to, particulates found in a certain product. On or about, blah, 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 employer, right, did not evaluate. So for another chemical. Now, something, right, you got to do that. Now, as I pointed out earlier this year, 50,000 people a year die in the workplace or from work-related industrial hygiene issues, and here's the rule. If you have a respiratory hazard, guess what? You need to do an assessment. Now, if you do not have a respiratory hazard, what do you do? I would advise you to write it down somewhere that you did an assessment and there were no respiratory hazards. Now, I would hire somebody who knows what the hell is going on, a certified safety professional, possibly, certified industrial hygienist, certified hazardous materials manager, or somebody who really knows what the hell they're doing. And, you know, one of these days we'll have a talk on a lot of stuff here with this. Employees were exposed to particulates not otherwise regulated, respirable fracture to total dust hazard here. And this was for $12,445. What were the other ones? That seems to be the number in this one. $12,445 with that. Citation item 3B, feasible administration, and this was zero. Engineering controls, not done. That's your whole hierarchy of control thing. The employer did not assess the workplace to determine if hazards are present or are likely to be present. Pardon me. Employees were exposed to skin and eye irritation, and that the employee did not assess the workplace to determine if hazards are present. Now, I had a discussion with a friend of the program yesterday on specifically these issues. I had mentioned when I was on Coast to Coast with Ian Punnett last year that just because something doesn't have an exposure limit necessarily does not mean that you could just expose people. So famous case, the popcorn flavorings case back in the early 2000s. And the conclusion was that in lieu of not having a PEL or REL or TLV or something like that exposure standard, that essentially the warning properties of that chemical are now the PEL. So here we have in this case here with this, right? The employer did not assess workplace and determine if worker hazards are present. So here we had people getting skin and eye irritation. Again, this is a first aid issue, right, with this. And skin and eye irritation. Should they have gotten had some type of an assessment done? Absolutely. And issue a report in writing. Eye or face protection, again, from flying particles, $1,165. Employer did not provide the basic advisory information on respirators. In Appendix D, another $1,165. So let's say that you're going to be, respirators are not mandatory. Still have to sign off on Appendix D and train your people on that of the respiratory protection standard. Just the way it is, folks. So here we have another set of violations here. Lockout, tagout. This is the one that apparently with a person... So you have not only issue a plan, you have to look it over periodically, usually annually or more. $14,000 on that. Each affected employee was not instructed on the purpose and use of the energy control procedure. That means that they interviewed people and they were like, what the hell? I don't know. That means ineffective training. $10,372. And we have another one, point of operations of machines whose operation exposes an employee to injury shall be guarded. So no equipment guarding on this one. Or inadequate, another $14,518. And again, certification of training did not contain each employee name and the date of training. For a grand total of $55,539 on that set. So again, everybody's innocent until proven guilty on here. So basically, a person was killed over this stuff. They're lucky that that's all that they got, but it would have been better had nobody gotten hurt to begin with. Okay, let's see the other one. Department of Labor finds a certain company fired an employee who reported deceptive practices to leadership. The U.S. Department of Labor has ordered a certain company in Plano, Texas, and its parent company in Seattle to reinstate and pay back wages and compensatory damages to an employee who was fired in June 2023 after informing upper management about deceptive business practices. A whistleblower investigation by the department OSHA found the employee alerted the company management that customer refunds after canceling services were not issued in a timely manner to hundreds of customers because the company is requiring them to complete unnecessary steps in the cancellation process. The employee suffered retaliation for reporting what they reasonably believed to be a violation of the law. The actions of the company and its parent company are wholly not acceptable, said OSHA Regional Administrator Eric S. Harbin in Dallas. Federal law protects the right of an employee to report unfair business practices and financial deception without fear of any type of retaliation. Our investigation found the employee suffered retaliation after responsibly alerting the company that its actions violated the law. In addition to ordering the employee's reinstatement, OSHA has instructed the employer to pay $109,661 in back wages and $76,289 in compensatory damages to the employee. The agency determined that the companies violated provisions of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and the Consumer Financial Protection Act that forbid employer retaliation against a worker who raises concerns. So OSHA, at current count, it's 25. OSHA manages 20 whistleblower stuff in 25 different areas. On program earlier this week, which I will be uploading this weekend, we had gone into this with whistleblower and also stop work. So people think authority that you have whistleblower protections we mentioned, but OSHA manages all this stuff. Now, my opinion, probably they should all these whistleblower complaints should be handled by someone outside of OSHA. My opinion. Why? OSHA has enough to do. So either increase their funding or move it to another agency, even if they have to create another agency with this. What ends up happening is they have a lot of these cases, and it uses up a huge chunk of their time with this, to manage this with their budget. You think that they're managing safety, they're managing all this other stuff. Okay, there is another injury here. Hold on. And let's go to another commercial break here.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
All right. So here we have our next story here. Department of Labor cites a Boaz mobile home manufacturer after a 62-year-old worker suffers fatal trauma after a 10-foot fall. A Boaz home manufacturer could have prevented a 62-year-old roofing laborer's fatal flaw had the employer followed required fall protection standards, a U.S. Department of Labor investigation found. OSHA cited the company with 10 serious violations for hazards. So basically, the person slipped off the roof, or the employee was alone loading shingles as they straddled a 2-foot wide space between a platform and mobile home's roof when they slipped and fell approximately 10 feet. Doesn't take much, guys. Failure to train workers at, again, this is being regulated as a general industry thing, apparently. Even though it is, I guess these are prefabs, right? Mobile homes, yeah, prefab homes. Or it could be a tow behind. I'm not sure. I don't want to get into it because I don't feel like dealing with attorneys, right? Oh, you said this about my equipment. No, I don't deal with that. The agency proposed $81,463 in penalties. Again, I don't get it. I mean, it is 2024 here. I don't get it. I really don't. So, here, okay. Here we have citation 9 and 1, type of violation series. Except as provided elsewhere in this section, 29 CFR 1910.28. Again, that's general industry. The employer did not ensure that each employee on a walking working surface with an unprotected side or edge that's 4 feet or more above a lower level is protected from falling by one or more of the following systems described in the section. Again, with construction, it's 6 foot. General industry, 4 foot. Again, right? You gotta, and again, it's, now where I see a lot of injuries, not even in industry, in my maritime, in my ship, ship experience here, is the transition from the boat to the shore, one boat to another, or something like that. And it's the same thing here. Well, what happened here is moving from one piece of equipment to another, guess what? You might have an issue. Now, what we've done on certain jobs was where we could not easily put up a guardrail system, that we actually used the guard. We went and put scissor lifts around a elevated work area. Now, you're going to say, did you tie off to them? No, we used the scissor lifts as a guardrail. That might have been a solution here. That might have worked here. Yes, we are dealing with the 100-degree heat here in New York. I'm getting sweated up, and I'm under these studio lights. Each flight of stairs having at least 3 treads and at least 4 risers was not equipped with a stair rail system. Right? Again, missing handrails. That was $5,600. First one was $16,000. Third one here, citation 1, item 3, $13,066. I don't know how they came up with that number. No training on personal fall arrest systems. Citation 1, item 4, type of violation. Seriously, the employer did not assess the workplace to determine if hazards are present, which should necessitate PPE. That one was $5,600. And no hand protection on here with this. When they're exposed to any type of hand hazards, $5,600. The employer did not ensure that each powered industrial truck operator, which means a forklift, usually, again, not only have to take
a training class, you have to actually have a visual test, you know, a functional test by a qualified person. We're doing that this weekend. Yay. The conductors and or equipment required or permitted by this subpart were not approved. So let's see what this is. At the roofing department on or about November 16th at Times Square, the employer exposed employees to electrical hazards in that an in-house electrical connector was used to extend the electrical circuit was not approved. Wow, you really got to know what the hell's going on with that one to get, you know, for OSHA to get you on that one. OSHA really has got to know what's going on there. And another similar one, $5,600. Another electrical situation. No HAZCOM. $5,600. No right to know inventory. They got them for zero on that one. But no inventory chemicals. No training on hazardous chemicals. For a grand total of $81,463. Okay. I don't know. No, I don't know what to say with this stuff. And all right, let's check out some of the other news here. Where did it go? All right. These are not from government websites, so I can't really show them on the air here. But this is from the Epoch Times. Why nearly half of U.S. online job postings are fake. Recruitment professionals and victims, and this is a story as Premium reports. I don't know who the, oh, by Autumn Spreadman here. Recruitment professionals and victims of ghost postings say the practice hurts everyone, including companies that create them. Amid complex hiring processes, a shadow is spreading in the American business world. Companies are using fake online job openings to project an image of growth, keep existing employees motivated, and cultivate a pool of possible future candidates with no intention of hiring. So this is basically called ghost posting, and according to this article, it accounts for 43% of online job openings across multiple industries. So, what are some of my thoughts on here? This sounds like a possible Securities and Exchange Commission violation here, in my opinion. Because image of growth, right, you're trying to portray your company's doing better than what it is. If that's a publicly traded company, you got a problem there. If you're selling the company, you might have a problem there. The other stuff is just bad management. I mean, keep existing employees motivated. Oh, look at us. We're doing this. Oh, we're hiring more and more people. I actually had a conversation with someone where that's what the company was doing. Right? Oh, look, we have all this money coming, all these jobs coming on, and they at the same time, they're laying people off. Possible future candidates with no intention of hiring. Oh, yeah, the headhunters do that all the time. I mean, I applied to a couple of headhunting jobs back in the mid-2000s, and I'm still getting phone calls from them. Oh, hi, Jim. Are you still in the safety business? Oh, we got a job for you. Blah, 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 blah. And it turns out these people don't know what the safety business is. They don't know what we do, but they're going to be recruiting people for it. And, you know, sad soul, you know, just right. According to another poll, 55% of people, Americans, say they're completely burned out from job hunting. I mean, I know people who've applied to thousands of jobs, not get a call back. Now, they end up having to, you know, there's fake posts, there's this, there's that. I don't know. Unethical behavior here. Home prices here hit record high in May as sales stall. Well, what does that have to do with the safety war here? Well, yeah, it does. It's called money. Basically, people are spending a lot of money for less. and putting a lot of stress in the system, and people know that. So, you know, it is what it is with that, and that impacts the way people manage people. Hold on. Okay, and this computer is starting to lock up on me. This is not good. Okay. Hawaii agrees to historic settlement in youth climate case. U.S. state of Hawaii has reached an historic agreement in response to litigation by youth activists promising to speed up. I just lost it here. 13 young, no, promising to speed up the decarbonization of its transport sector to protect their right to a safe and healthy climate. This is a big one, guys. All right, because they settled, you're going to see a lot more of these cases. 13 young people from across the islands brought the case in June 2022. I believe we covered this story on this program, arguing that their constitutional rights to a life-sustaining climate were being violated. They asked the state government to take action to implement its goals to of net, this is from Barron's here, goals of net negative emissions in the transport system by 2045. And again, why do people settle with a lot of this stuff? Well, guess what? I don't want to continue the litigation. It's going to cost more money. Many of the plaintiffs are native Hawaiian youths experiencing climate change harms, including sea level rise, droughts, floods, and fires, which are threatening their lives. So that, and their ability to carry out cultural practices. Incredible on that. You're going to see more of these cases. For the long, this is from DNYUZ News, right, here. The weather becoming political. They're reporting like this is a new thing here. The weather has been political for an awful long time, even before the current global warming debate. Now, just watching the news tonight with this heat dome above the northeast here, we're hearing this, hearing all different types of stuff. We're, you know, they're in a panic. They're apoplectic, it seems, here on the news. Here, well, guess what? We've had hot weather before. We'll have had it again. I was listening to one researcher that was talking about what could have caused the last ice age to end and all this flooding. Now, one of the current theories is the solar mass ejection. Why do I mention this? There's a lot of stuff we don't understand here. Right, where there's been proof of a coronal mass ejection 12,000 years ago. Here you have an dead Tesla traps toddler in hot car and raises a concern about electric doors. Adults can use manual door releases from the inside of dead electric vehicles, but younger ones can't. Well, this is one of the things with this is, no, they point out Tesla here with a woman, right? The woman had taken her grandchild out and hot weather in this time of year in Arizona and that sort of thing, right? The woman was in there. How did they get out of here? They told her they could not get into the car, but as reported, she gave them a go-ahead to break in at all costs. Surely enough, the fire department smashed a window and retrieved the child, right? Notably, Tesla does have a procedure to get in the car, but it requires several steps and a battery charger. Now, this sounds like a new thing, right? Thank God the woman realized, unlike what happened in our town a couple years ago. Right now, and I would like to credit people like Todd Conklin for making this change in cars. I recently got a used vehicle. Got a real good deal on a used vehicle. And now when I turn the car off, I get in there, check the back seat for passengers. Right. And he was one of the ones who was advocating that. So I would like to think that Todd, friend of the program, Todd Conklin, great podcast. I would like to think that he had a hand in that. But this is nothing new. So we remember back when I was growing up, back in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, you used to have the button, right, for the lock. Up, it's open. The door is unlocked. Down, it is locked. A lot of cars don't have that anymore. They have like an indicator pin, locked and unlocked. Or they may have on the door itself red, or no, red, no, it's unlocked, right, when the switch or a lever is up, there's a red, right? Children do not realize that, what that is. So, along with a lot of the minivans out there, not, I believe all the brands have this, you have a button with a sliding rear window, rear door, you press the button, it opens and shuts. Children don't know how to operate that necessarily. Back in the 70s, it's pretty simple. Pull the lever and the door is locked, then it's going to be unlocked. Easy. Now you got to go through, might have to go through a couple of steps to get the door open. Apparently that's what happens here with these electric cars. So maybe it would be a good thing to show your children, and I'll say the other end also works, the technology resistant population, to show them and run through this. Don't assume that people know what's going on, and especially if it's a company truck. I had one of my clients, they had to do repairs on three or four vehicles, and they were very expensive repairs because people were ripping door handles off because they didn't know how to unlock a door. Right? It was, you know, very expensive. Those go for like $700 to get that fixed. Now, back in the early 1990s in California, might have been late 1990s, early 2000s in California, there was a power situation there. If you look back at the old issues of Regulation Magazine, there's a, when Gray Davis was governor, there was a pretty extensive story on that, probably still available. Regulation Magazine, last I checked, has archives. But this is not something that is a new issue. This power problems because of technology have been putting stress on the power grid. Right now we have the blockchain technology for like cryptocurrency that puts a huge strain. And we have all this AI and all this computer stuff. And I mean, here I got four lights. I got two phones going on. I got a computer. Basically, the phones are computers. And we got this and that. Guess what? It uses a lot of power. Guess what? Bigger stress on the electric power system. And the memes are all over the place, all over the internet here. With that. So I'm looking here from the Washington Post, AI exhausting the power grid. Tech firms are seeking a miracle solution. Glenn Beck this week, I don't normally listen to him, but he had a someone on talking about what they were going to do, what they were looking at for supply power for this stuff. And let's just say it was, think of Matrix level stuff. Some researchers are involved in using human stem cells to power, to generate electricity. So near the riverbanks in central Washington, Microsoft is betting on an effort to generate power from atomic fusion, the collision of atoms that powers the sun, a breakthrough that has eluded fusion, that is, not fission, that has eluded scientists for the past century. Physicists predicted will elude Microsoft. So what they're looking for are micro reactors from what it doesn't say that here, but that's basically it. Everyone's looking for micro reactors going way back. A ChatGPT powered search, according to the International Energy Agency, consumes almost 10 times the amount of electricity as a search on Google. Really? Okay. So we're talking another energy crisis self-created by us. Now, here is a story from Wired magazine. Morgan Meeker is the author. My memories are just Meta's training data now. Meta plans to use personal content posted by Facebook and Instagram users to train algorithms, suggest our digital histories are being repackaged and teach AI about how to mimic humanity. Again, we're looking at Matrix and Terminator level stuff here, folks. So that's what I got for tonight. We will be dropping these episodes on your favorite podcast platforms this weekend. That's something I could not get to this week. The project that I'm working on is very remote and has no internet access. And we're getting home at 9 or 10 o'clock at night here. And it's rough. It's rough. I'm not complaining because at least I have work to do. So I want to thank everybody for their support through these last 3 years, 4 years, we're on our fourth season. It's been fun. We're going to continue to do this for the time being, hopefully forever, or at least until I'm retired. And what's retirement? I don't know. We're going to... We're going to go, and here we go. I'm finally getting a hold of, the hang of this here. So, all right, I will see you folks on Monday and possibly over the weekend. You never know. I might drop in. You never know. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Poelzel. Hold on.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.